Starting the recording here in the chat, and I see some questions already coming in. So thank you so much for your talk, Zach, and I'll step out of your way and let you field some of these questions.
Sounds good. All right, so let's see. Going off of the question list. So the first one is about having reduced version of the functionality integrated into iSearch. So, with the way things are set up, like it is essentially a framework. So, you can create a candidate. So just a review from the talk. So you have these candidate generators, which generate search candidates. So you can have a file system candidate which generates these file documents, which have text content in them. In theory, you could have like a website candidate generator, and it could be like a web crawler. So there's a lot of different options. So one option it's on my mind, and I hope to get to this soon, is create a defun, like a defun candidate generator. So basically it takes a file, splits it up into like defuns, kind of like just like what iSearch would do, and then use each of those, the body of those, as a content for the search session. So, I mean, essentially you could start up a session, and there's like programmatic ways to start these up too. So you could, if such a candidate generator was created, you could easily, and just like, you know, one command, just like get the defuns, make it a part of this, like create a search session with it, and then just go straight to your query. So definitely that's something just like this is in the works. And I guess another thing is kind of interface. So there's the whole dedicated buffer is helpful for searching, but like with this iSearch case, there's currently not a way to like have like a reduced UI where it's just like, okay, I have these function defuns for the current file. I just want them to pop up, you know, pretty like at the bottom so I can quickly go through it. So currently I don't have that, but such a UI is definitely, thinking about how that could be done. All right, so next question, Andy, how this would work with personal information like Zettelkasten. So this is like, I mean, it's essentially usable as is with Zettelkasten method. So, for example, OrgRome, and I think other ones like Denote, they put all these files in a directory. And so with the already existing file system candidate generator, all you'd have to do is set that to be the directory of your Zettelkasten system. And then it would just pick up all the files in there and then add those as search candidates. So you could easily just search whatever system you have. And based off of the ways it's set up, if you had maybe your dailies you didn't want to search, it's just as easy to add a criteria saying, I don't want dailies to be searched. Like just eliminate the day, like the things from the daily from the subdirectory. And then there you go. You have your Zettelkasten search engine, and you could just copy the, you know, there's, I mean, there, I need, I'm working on documentation for this to kind of set this up easily, but you know, you could just create your simple command, just like your simple command, just like just take in a text query, run it through the system, and then just get your search results right there. So yeah, definitely that is a use case that's on top of my mind. So next one, how good does a search work for synonyms, especially if you use different languages? Okay, this is a good question, because with the way that BM25 works, it's essentially just like trying to find where terms occur and just counts them up. So, I mean, this is something I couldn't get into. There's just too much on the topic of information retrieval to go into this, but there's a whole kind of field of just like, how do you, given a search term, how do you know what you should search for? So like popular kind of industrial search engines, like they have kind of this feature where you can like define synonyms, define term replacements. So like whenever you see this term, it should be this. And there's, it even gets even further. Like, how do you, like, if someone searches for a plural string, I mean, how do you get the singular from that and search for that? So this is a huge topic that currently PSearch doesn't address, but it's on the top of my mind as to how, like, so that's one part. The next part is like for different languages, one thing that kind of seems like it's promising is vector search, which, I mean, with the way PSearch is set up, it's, you could easily just create a vector search prior, plug it into the system and start using it. The only problem is that kind of the vector search functions, like you have to do like cosine similarity. Like if you have like 10,000 documents, if you're writing ELISP to calculate the cosine similarity between the vectors, that's going to be very slow. And so like now the whole can of worms of like indexing comes up, and like how do you do that, and like is that going to be native ELISP? And so that's a whole other can of worms. So yeah, vector search seems promising. And then hopefully maybe other traditional kind of like synonyms, stemming, that kind of stuff, like for alternate terms, that could also be incorporated. Okay, next one. When searching by author, I know authors may set up a new machine and not put the exact same information. Is this doing anything combine these two in one author? Okay, so for this one, it's not. So if like the way the Git prior is currently set up is that it lists, it just does like a Git command to get all the Git authors, and you select one and then it just uses that. So, but the thing is if you knew the two emails that user might have used, the two usernames, you could just set up the two priors, one for the old user's email, and then just add another prior for the new user's email. And then that would be a way to just, you know, get both of those set up. So, and that's kind of a running theme throughout PSearch, is that it's made to be very flexible and very kind of like Lego blockish, kind of like you can just, you know, if you need, you know, if something doesn't meet your needs, you know, it's easy to put pieces in, create new components of the search engine. Let's see. The cool and powerful grep rack to maybe have some good ideas, increasing value of searches, rack of code while searching. Okay, that's interesting. I'll have to look into this tool. I haven't seen that. I do kind of keep my eyes out for these kind of things. One thing I have seen that was kind of that, I mean, looked interesting was kind of like AST, like the tree sitter grep tools. So like you can grep for a string in the language itself. So that's something I think would be cool to implement, either because I mean there's tree sitter in Emacs, so it's possible to do it in ELISP. If not, there are those like kind of like tree sitter tools. So that's something that I think would be cool to incorporate. Let's see. Have you thought about integrating results from using cosine similarity with a deep learning based vector embedding? Yeah, exactly. So yeah, this kind of goes back to the topic before. Definitely like the whole semantic search with vector embeddings. That's something that, I mean, it would be actually kind of trivial to implement that in PSearch, but like I said, computing the cosine similarity in ELISP, it's probably too slow. So and then also there's a whole question of like how do you get the embeddings, like how do you get the system running locally on your machine if you want to run it that, or I mean, so that's actually another kind of aspect that I need to look into. Okay, so let's see. Okay, next question. Let's see. I'm sorry, the talks about just cover. Is it possible to save bookmark searches or send search templates so they can be used again and again? Exactly. So just recently added bookmarking capabilities. So you can essentially just bookmark whatever search session you have. And yeah, and it's just a bookmark you can just open in and just like rerun that search from where you left off. So there's that. And then also, I tried to set this up so that there is a one-to-one mapping of a Lisp object to the search session. So from every search session you make, you should be able to get there's a command to do this, to get a data representation of the search. So it'd just be like some plist. All you have to do is just take that plist, call this function psearch setup buffer with that data, and then that function should set up the session as you left off. So then, like, you know, you could make your commands easy. You can make custom search commands super easy. You just get the data representation of that search, find what pieces you want the user to be able to, you know, the search term, make that a parameter in the command, the interactive code. So you'd have like the parameter top, and then there you go. You have a command to do the search, just right there. So there's a lot of those things, and there's a lot more that could be done. Like maybe having, there's kind of in the works, and like thinking about having groups of these things. Like maybe you can set up like, oh, I always add these three criteria together. So maybe I can make a preset out of these and make them easily addable. So yeah, a lot of things like that are, you know, I'm thinking about a lot of things about that. So. Okay, so next question. You mentioned about candidate generators. Could you explain about what the score is assigned to? Is this to a line or whatever the candidate generates? How does it work with our junior demo? Okay, yeah, so I had to rewrite PSearch just to get this part right. So a candidate generator generates documents. Documents have properties. So the most notable property is the content property. So essentially what happens is that when you create a file system candidate generator and give it a directory, the code goes into the directory, kind of recursively goes through all the directories and generates a candidate, which is just like a simple Lisp form. It's saying, this is a file, the file path is this. So that's the document ID. So saying this is a file, it's a file, and its file path is this. And so from that, you get all of the different properties, the sub properties. So if you're given that, you know how to get the content. If you're given that, you know how to, so all these properties come out. And then also the candidate generator is the thing that knows how best to search for the terms. So for example, there is a buffer candidate generator. What that does is it just puts all your buffers as search candidates. So obviously you can't run ripgrep on buffers. Like you can't do that. Yeah, you can't run ripgrep on just like buffers that don't have files attached. Or for example, maybe there's like an internet search candidate generator, like a web crawler thing. You just imagine it goes to a website, kind of crawls all the links and all that, and then just gets your web pages for the candidates. Obviously, you can't use ripgrep for that either. So every candidate generator knows how best to search for the terms of what candidate it's generating. So the file system candidate generator will say, okay, I have a base directory. So if you ask me, the file system candidate generator, how to get the terms, it knows it's set up to use ripgrep. And so it runs ripgrep, and so then it runs the command, gets the counts, and then stores the counts. So the lines have nothing. At this point, the lines have nothing. There's no notion of lines at all. It's just document ID with the amount of times it matched. And that's all you need to run this BM25 algorithm. But then when you get the top results, you obviously want to see the lines that matched. And so there's another method to kind of get the exact thing, to get to kind of match out the particular lines. And so that's a separate mechanism. And that can be done in ELIST, because if you're not displaying, that's kind of a design decision of PSearch, is that it only displays like maybe 10 or 20. It doesn't display all the results. So you can have ELIST just go crazy with just like highlighting things, picking the best kind of pieces to show. So yeah, that's how that is set up.
So here's perhaps a good moment for me to just jump in and comment that in a minute or so, we will break away with the live stream to give people an hour of less content to make sure everybody goes and takes their lunch and break a little bit. But if you would like to keep going in here, love to take as many questions. And of course, we'll include that all when we publish the Q&A.
Sounds good. Yeah, definitely. I can go over the
and stick around on the stream as we cut away, as we've got a little video surprise we've all prepared to play. Just some comments from an Emacs user dated in 2020 or something like this. I forget the detail. Thank you again so much, Zach, for your fascinating talk.
Thanks. So, okay. This makes me really think about the emergent workflows with Denote and easy filtering with orderlists. Did this or something like this help influence the design of PSearch? Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, there's just so many different search, like it's just kind of mind-boggling. Like you could search for whatever you want on your computer. Like there's just so much, like you can't just hard code any of these things, because it's all malleable. Like maybe somebody wants to search these directories exactly like that use case of having a directory of files where you know, they contain your like your personal knowledge management system. Yeah, I mean that use case definitely was at the top of my mind. Let's see. Let's see. So Git covers the multiple names thing itself. Git feature piece should need to implement it. Okay, yeah. So something about not much with PSearch UI. Actually, interestingly, I think not much is. I haven't used it myself, but that's the email. Something about, yeah. So, I mean, this is like these things are just like these kind of extensions could kind of go forever, but one thing I thought about is like I use Mu4e for email, and like that uses a full-fledged index, and so like having PSearch, having some method to kind of reach into these different systems and kind of be kind of like a front end for this. Like another thing is like maybe SQL database, like you can create a candidate generator from a SQLite query, and then so like there's lots of different, like there's tons of, I've had tons of ideas of different things you could incorporate into this in the system. So yeah, slowly they're being implemented. Just recently I implemented an info file candidate generator. So it lists out all the info files, and then it creates a candidate for each of the info nodes. So turns out, yeah, I mean, it works just as well as Google. So up from my own testing. Let's see, you can search a buffer using ripgrep by feeding it in as standard in to the ripgrep process, can't you? Yep, yeah, you can definitely search a buffer that way. So yeah, I mean, based off of, I mean, if this, yeah. So one thing that came up is that the system wants, I wanted the system to be able to search a lot of different things. And so it came up that I had, you know, implementing, doing these search things, having an elist implementation, despite it being slow, would be necessary. So like anything that isn't represented as a file, elisp, there's a mechanism in psearch to search for it. So having that redundancy kind of lets you get into the, you know, using kind of ripgrep for the big scale things. But then when you get to the individual file, going back to elisp to kind of get the finer details seems to end up working pretty well. Thank you all for listening.
Yeah, sounds like we're about out of questions.
Hi, Zach. I have a question, or still a question.
I just want to thank everybody one more time for their participation, especially you for speaking, Zach. I look forward to playing with PSearch myself.
Well, thank you. Yeah, there might be one last question. Is there someone?
Yes, there is. I don't know if you can understand me, but thank you for making this lovely thing. I feel inspired to try it out and thinking about how to integrate it, because it sounds modular and nicely thought out. One small question: have you thought about Project L integration? And then I have a little bigger question about the interface.
Yeah, Project L integration. It's used in a couple of ways. It's kind of used to kind of as like kind of like a default, this is the directory I want to search for, like the default psearch command. It does, yeah, it kind of goes off of Project L if there is a project and kind of says, okay, this I want to search this project. And so kind of it used that as a default. So there's that.
Yeah, because I use the Project L grep or git grep search a lot, and maybe this is a better solution. The search and the interface you have right now for the search results, how happy are you with it, and have you thought about improving, or have you ideas for improvements?
Yeah, well, actually what you see in the demo and the video is an improvement in the current code. And so basically what it does is it scans, there's the current default is it scans the entire file for all of the searches, and it finds the window that has the highest score. So it kind of goes through the entire file and just says, and kind of finds like the piece of the section of text that has the most matches with the terms that score the best. So it's, I mean, that section is pretty good. I mean, that, so yeah, that ends up working pretty well. So, I mean, in terms of other UI stuff, there's tons more that could be done, like, especially like debuggability or like introspection. Like, so this result, like, for example, this result ranks really high. Maybe you don't know why, though. It's like, is it because of this text query I wrote? Was it because of this criteria? So I think there's some UI elements that could kind of help the user understand why results are scoring high or low. So that's definitely in
that makes a lot of sense to me. You know, a lot of it is demystifying, like understanding what you're learning better, and not just finding the right thing. A lot of it is, you know, kind of exploring your data. I love that. Thanks.
Okay.
I'm not trying to hurry us through either by any stretch. I would be happy to see this be a conversation. I also want to be considerate of your time. And I also wanted to make a quick shout out to everybody who's been updating and helping us capture the questions and the comments in the Etherpad. That's just a big help to the extent that people are jumping in there and, you know, revising and extending and just doing the best job we can to capture all the thoughtful remarks.
Yeah, thank you, Zach. I'm not too sure what to ask anymore, but yes, would love to try it out now.
Yeah, I mean, definitely feel free to any feedback. There's my mail or issues. Yeah, I mean, I'm happy to get any feedback. It's still in the early stages. So still kind of a lot of documentation that needs to be writing, and so there's a lot on the roadmap. But yeah, I mean, hopefully I could even publish this to ELPA and have a nice manual. So yeah, hopefully, yeah, those come soon.
Epic. That sounds great.
Yes.
The ability to save your searches kind of reminds me of like the GPT-L package for the AI, where you can save searches, which makes it feel a lot more different. And we don't have something for that with search, but yeah, that's a whole different dynamic where it's like, okay, yeah. And makes it a unique tool that is, I guess, would be unique to Emacs, where you don't see that with like this AI package, where the GPTL is kind of unique because it's not just throw away. It's how did I get this? How did I search for it? And be an organic search, kind of like the Orderless and Vertigo. And
yeah, that's a good, I mean, that brings me to another thing. And that, so, I mean, you could easily, you could create bridges from PSearch to these different other packages. Like, for example, kind of a RAG search, there's this thing called a RAG workflow, which is kind of popular these days. It's like retrieval augmented generation. So you do a search, and then based off the search results you get, you pass those into LLM. So the cool thing is that, like, you could use PSearch for the retrieval. And so you could even, like, I mean, you know, you could even ask an LLM to come up with the search terms and then have it search. And then there's no like programmatical interface now to do this exact workflow. But I mean, this is another kind of direction I'm starting to think about. So like, you could have, yeah, like maybe like a question answer kind of workflow where it's like, it does like an initial search for the terms, and then you get the top results, and then you can put that through maybe GPTL or all these other different systems. So that seems like a promising thing. And then another thing is like what you mentioned, like
the ability to save a search. And one thing I've noticed kind of like with the DevOps workflows is like I'll write a CLI command that I do, or like a calculator command. Then I end up in the org mode document, write what I wrote, had the results in there, and then I'll go back to that. It's like, oh, this is why, this is that calculation I did, and this is why I did it. And I'll have like run the same tool three different times to get three different answers. If it was like a calculator, for example. But yeah, that's a very unique feature that isn't seen, and will make me look at it and see about integrating it into my workflow.
Yeah, I think you get on some interesting, you know, kind of what makes Emacs really unique there, and how to, you know, interesting, you know, kind of ways to exploit Emacs to learn in the problem. So like, I'm seeing a number of ways you're getting at that. Like, for example, if I think about like an automation workflow, and there's just a million, we'll say, assumptions that are baked into a search product, so to speak, like represented by Google search or Bing or what have you. And then as I unpack that and repack it kind of from an Emacs workflow standpoint, thinking about, well, you know, first of all, you know, what is the yak I'm shaving? And then also, what does doing it right mean? How would I reuse this? How would I make the code accessible to others for their own purposes, you know, in a free software world kind of way? And all of the different sort of and say like orthogonal headspacey kind of things, right? Emacs brings a lot to the table from a search standpoint because I'm going to want to think about, I'm going to want to think about where does the UI come in? Where might the user want to get involved interactively? Where might the user want to get involved declaratively with their configuration, perhaps based on the particular environment where this Emacs is running? And there's just a lot of what Emacs users think about that really applies, I'll use the word again, orthogonally across all my many workflows as an Emacs user. You know, the search is just such a big word.
Yeah, that's actually, this exact point I was thinking about with this. It's like, I mean, it seems kind of obvious, like just like using ripgrep or something, just like get search counts. Like, okay, you can just run the command, get the term counts, and you could just run it through kind of a relatively simple algorithm to kind of get your search score. It's like, if it's this easy though, like why don't we see this in other, because, and the results are actually surprisingly good. Like, so why don't we see this anywhere really? And it occurred to me that just the amount of configuration, the amount of setup you have to do to get it right, it's above this threshold that you need something like Emacs to kind of get pushed through that configuration. So like, for example, that's why I rely heavily on Transient to set up the system. Cause like, if you want to get good search results, you're going to have to like configure a lot of stuff. Like, I want this directory. I want this. I don't want this directory. I want these search terms. You know, there's a lot to set up. And in most programs, I mean, they don't have an easy way to, I mean, they'll often try to hide all this complexity. Like they say, okay, our users too, you know, we don't want to scare our users with like, you know, complicated search engine configuration. So we're just going to do it all in the background, and we're just not going to let the user even know that it's happening. And
I mean, that's the third time you made me laugh out loud. Sorry for interrupting you, but yeah, you're just spot on there. You're some people's users. Am I right? Like, you know, and also some people's workflows, and you know, another case where just like if you're thinking about Emacs, you either have to pick a tunnel to dive into and be like, no, this is going to be right for my work, or your problem space is never ending in terms of discovering the ways other people are using Emacs and how that breaks your feature, you know, and how that breaks your conceptualization of the problem space, right? Or you just have to get so narrowed down that can actually be hard to find people that are quite understand you, right? You get into the particular, well, it solves these three problems for me. Well, what are these three problems again? And this is a month to unpack.
Emacs, and I don't know, it's like you got a lot of, they all agree, it's like, we're going to use ELISP to set variables. Every Emacs package is going to do that. We're going to use ELISP and have a search in place to put our documentation. And like, it does also eliminate a lot of confusion and gives a lot of expectations of what they want. So one thing that I'm surprised I haven't seen elsewhere is you have the consult Omni package, which allows you to search multiple websites simultaneously for multiple web search engines and put them in one thing. And it's like, and then you use orderless. Why would you use orderless? Because that's what you configured and you know exactly what you want to use, and you use the same font and your same mini buffer, and you use all that existing configuration because, well, you're an Emacs user, or like you're a command line user. You know how you want these applications to go. You don't want them to be reinvented the wheel 1600 times in 1600 different ways. You want it to use your mini buffer, your font, your et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But I haven't ever seen like I haven't seen a website where I can search multiple websites at the same time in something like Emacs before. And it's like, with my sorting algorithm.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I mean, just setting the bar for configuration and setup, just like, yeah, you have to have ELISP. Yeah, I mean, it does, obviously, it's not most beginner friendly, but I mean, it definitely widens the amount of the solution space you can have to such problems.
Oh my gosh, you use the word solution space. I love it.
But on the flip side, it's like, why does Emacs get this consult Omni package? Or let's see, you have Elfeed YouTube where it will put a flowing transcript on a YouTube video, or you got your package. Why does it get all these applications? And I don't see applications like this as much outside of Emacs. So there's a way that it just
it's
makes
because
it
user
easier.
Interface is the, you know, it's the economy stupid of technology, right? If you grab people by the UX, you can sell a million of any product that solves a problem that I didn't think technology could solve, or that I didn't think I had the patience to use technology to solve, which is a lot of times what it comes down to. And here exactly is the, you know, the Emacs sort of conundrum, right? How much time should I spend today updating my Emacs so that tomorrow I can just work more? Right. And, you know, I love that little graph of the Emacs learning curve, right, where it's this concentric, it becomes this concentric spiral, right? The Vim learning curve is like a ladder, right? Or, you know, and the nano learning curve is like just a flat plane, you know, or a ladder, a vertical ladder, and or a horizontal ladder. There we go. And in the Emacs learning curve is this kind of straight up line until it curves back on itself and eventually spirals. And the more you learn, the harder it is to learn the next thing. And are you really moving forward at all? Like, it just works for me. What a great analogy. And that's my answer, I think.
Yeah.
You know, it's because
spiral is great.
There are each of these weird little packages that some of us, you know, it solves that one problem and lets us get back to work. And for others, it makes us go, gosh, now that makes me rethink a whole bunch of things, because there's like, I don't even know what you're talking about with some of your conceptualizations of UI. Maybe it comes from, let's say, Visual Studio, and I've not used that or something. So for you, it's a perfectly normal UX paradigm that you kind of lean on. For others, it's like, you know, occupying some screen space, and I don't know what the gadgets do. And when I open them up, they're thinking about, you know, they imply their own abstractions, let's say logically, against a programming language. This would be tree sitter, right? If I'm not used to thinking in terms of an abstract syntax tree, some of the concepts just aren't as natural for me. If I'm used to, like, Emacs at a more fundamental level or the old modes, right? We're used to them thinking in terms of progressing forward through some text, managing a stack of markers into the text, right? It's a different paradigm. The world changes. Emacs kind of supports it all. That's why all the apps are built there.
That's why when you were talking about that spiral, what that hints at is that this is really just a different algorithm that you're transferring out that makes some things a lot easier and some things a lot harder. That's why I was bringing in those three packages, because in some way, it's making these search terms with reusable, let's see, savable buffers or interactive buffers in a way that is bigger than what I think it should have, especially in comparison to like how many people use YouTube. But I don't see very many YouTube apps that will show rolling subtitle list that you can click on to move up and down the video, even though YouTube's been around for years. Why does Emacs have a very good implementation that was duct taped together?
So before I let you respond to that, Zach, let me just say we're coming up on eating up a whole half hour of your lunchtime, and thank you for giving us that extra time. But let me just say, let's, you know, if I could ask you to take like up to another 5 minutes, and then I'll try to kick us off here and make sure everybody does remember to eat.
Yeah, sounds good. So yeah, it looks like there's one other question. So yeah, do you think Emacs being kind of slow will get in the way of being able to run a lot of scoring algorithms? So this is actually a thought I had, like, yeah, Emacs, because the code currently kind of does, I mean, it's kind of dumb in a lot of places. Like a lot of times it does just go through all the files and then just compute some score for them. But I'm surprised that that part actually isn't that slow. Like it turns out, like, okay, like if you take, for example, Emacs, like the Emacs directory or the Emacs Git repository, or maybe another big Git repository, like you could have an elisp function enumerate those and multiply some numbers, maybe multiply 10 numbers together. And that isn't that slow. So, and that's the bulk of what, the only thing that elisp has to do is just like multiply these numbers. Obviously, if you have to resort to elisp to search all the files and you have like 10 or 100,000 files, then yeah, Emacs will be slow. I mean, to manually search. So like if you're not using ripgrep or any faster tool and you have millions of files, then yeah, it will be slow. But what I noticed though is, like, for example, let's say you want to search like info directory, like info files for Emacs, and the Emacs info file and the elisp info file. So those are two decently sized kind of books, kind of like reference material on Emacs. Relying on elisp to search both of those together, it's actually like almost instant. I mean, it's not slow enough. So I think that's another thing, is like scale. Like I think on kind of like individual human level scales, I think elisp can be good enough. If you're going on the scale of like enterprise, like all the repositories, all the Git repositories of an enterprise, then yeah, that scale might be too much. But I think on the scale of what most individuals have to deal with on a daily basis, like, for example, maybe somebody has some, yeah, I think it should hopefully be enough. And if not, there's always room for optimizations. Yeah, so.
So I'll redirect you a little bit, because I, based on a couple of things I got into, you know, or if you want to be done, be like, you know, give me the high sign by all means, and we can shut up shop. But I'm curious, you know, what are your boundary conditions? What tends to cause you to write something more complicated, and what causes you to sort of work around it with a more complex workflow in Emacs terms? Like, where do you break out the big guns? Just thinking about like search, we talked about. Maybe that's too abstract a question, but just general usage.
Search, okay, yeah. So this seems
an example where almost all of us have probably written something to go find something, right?
Yeah, I mean, this is a good question. I'm actually of the idea, at my work, for example, I try to get rid of all. I mean, this is probably a typical Emacs user thing, but like, I mean, I think that having Emacs expand to whatever it can get into and whatever it can automate, like any task, any, like, just like the more you can kind of get that coded, I actually find that kind of like, I mean, it is kind of like a meme, like, yeah, I have to configure my Emacs until it's fun, and then I'll do it. But I actually think that maybe for like a normal software developer, if you invest maybe you have like some spare time after you've done all your tasks, if you invest all that time in just like kind of going through all the workflows, all the, you know, just getting all of that in Emacs, then I think that acts as kind of like a productivity multiplier. And so I found that, I mean, I found to not have those boundaries. I mean, obviously there's things you can't do, like web-based things, like that's a hard boundary, but that's more because, yeah, there's really not much to do about that. Like,
nobody's written a front-end engine, and too much of the forebrain is occupied with things that should happen on the quote-unquote end user's infrastructure, so to speak. So with the 40 seconds left, I was going to say a minute, but any final thoughts?
I mean, just thank you for listening, and thank you for putting this on. Yeah, it's a really nice conference to have, and I'm glad that things like this exist. So thank you.
Yeah, it's you and the other folks on this call. Thank you so much, Plasma Strike, and all the rest of you for hopping on the BBB and having such interesting discussion. Keeps it really fun for us as organizers. And thanks everybody for being here.